I'm Ed the Sock, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network, powered by your support on patreon.com/FUNetworkTV and through PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. And now, here's your show.
Now, let's listen.
Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Stephen. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing remarkably well, all things considered.
Isn't it interesting how are you went from being just one of those things that you automatically said when you ran into somebody, a pleasantry, and you, if they weren't well, it almost broke the social contract for them to say so?
Yeah.
Because it was supposed to be, how you doing? Great. How are you? Great. Even if things weren't great. You weren't supposed, they weren't really asking because they wanted that information.
They weren't really that interested.
It was just a form of, you know, social interaction that was automatic. And now it's turned into, how are you doing? It's a sincere question.
Yeah.
And
for good reason, most of the time.
Well, listen, I think I'm fortunate. Well, am I fortunate or are they fortunate? But the people I know, of all the people I know, only one came down with COVID-19. But he's a young guy. He lives in Saskatchewan. And he's, you know, was it Harry Truman who said, when you're going through hell, keep going?
Yeah.
You're
not saying that about Saskatchewan, are you?
No, but he has.
Guy spent a lot of time in Saskatchewan.
Yeah,
you know, Saskatchewan is like the king of social distancing. They were doing it before it was cool.
Yeah, they're very far apart anyway. But he came from a very, very small town. So even then it was, but he's in Saskatoon now. So I keep checking in with him and to see how he's doing. And he's young, but it's funny, the people that think that, I'll get it. I'm young. I'll get through it. Yeah, you probably will get through it. And the 85% of people who get it or more will get through it. Actually, more than 85%, the numbers are showing in Canada. But you're going to feel like crap while you have it. Like, this is not just a cold or the flu, which, we've all endured. This is, most people have not had the kind of respiratory distress that that COVID-19 causes. You've had respiratory distress when you've had a chest infection or things like that.
And pneumonia, if you're unfortunate enough to have had that. And I know you and I both have had pneumonia.
Yeah, and it's like pneumonia in a sense. I mean, and if you've had pneumonia, you never want it again. Because I had pneumonia, but it wasn't walking pneumonia because I couldn't walk. I was in bed, in a hospital. So people, you know, the ones who are cavalier that, well, if I get it, I'll, you know, just stay home. I'll watch Netflix you are going to feel so horrible that you are just going to lie there. And it's like lying there in bed, you're breathing like you've just finished, the Ironman triathlon. You know,
there was a good article in the Weekend Star. One of the reporters, a young woman, who actually is a friend of my brother Richard, who's a Toronto Star photographer, and he knows her well. And she wrote, she recovered, and she wrote an article. If I can find it, I'll post it.
I think I saw the headline about how this is no party.
Yeah, absolutely. And she talks about, you know, the symptoms day by day, you know, leading up to basically what you said, which is, you know, she thought, I'll have a shower. And it's like, I don't think I can make it to the bathroom. I'm wheezing so much.
Yeah.
It's like I've run a marathon and I've basically gone from my bed to my bedroom door. And I'm not sure I'm going to make it.
Yeah, you sit down at the bedroom door and try to catch your breath to get the energy to walk the next 2 feet. This is not exaggeration. This is what it feels like when you have this illness. And I mean, that's why respiratory illnesses take so many people who are infirm and take so many of our elderly who are infirm, because, you know, breathing is fundamental. And when you don't have a robust constitution that's buoying up the rest of you, it'll take you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and the saddest example is, you know, I have a cottage up in the Bob Cajun area, and you know, it's a seasonal one, so I haven't been up there since November last year. But I'm looking forward to the cottage season starting, and Pinecrest Nursing Home. I drive by it every time I'm going up there, it's on the way into Bob Cajun, what we call wishing well row, because everyone on their front porch has one of these fake wishing wells.
Oh, it's usually it's to cover the actual well.
Yeah, well, sometimes I guess it is sometimes.
I learned this when we moved up to our new house. It's like, why? Yeah. What is that metal pipe with that weird metal sheet metal roof they put on it on the front lawn? And we discovered that it's actually the well, and yeah, that most people get the wishing well things to sort of beauty it up and hide the metal yeah, bowl.
They are a lot prettier, but everyone seems to have them. Some people have several on their lawn for some reason. But
Pinecrest Nursing, I don't know how many wells they have, but okay.
Well, yeah, I know. But Pinecrest Nursing Home is on the way, and their death toll is up to, I think, 25 as we're recording this right now,
which is almost
half of the population of the nursing home.
Yeah, and you look at the world numbers, and Canada's numbers are not terrible. Yeah. We're at about I calculated last night we're nearer around 1.9% mortality rate.
Yeah. That seems to be, for people who've actually done something about it. I think I saw one of the last studies out of China was it was actually 0.86 when they finally came down and they counted all the people who they hadn't counted before who got it and recovered.
Right.
And were sort of on the margin, but 1% seems to be a good one. The United States is just, capped 10,000 deaths, and their worst is yet to come. But
yeah, and the 1% difference between us and the United States as far as mortality rate, that's significant. It sounds like 1%, it's nothing. And you look at Canada's deaths, and mm-hmm. we've had 321 deaths, and you look at that and say, I don't know if during the summer, during cottage country season, if there's not that many people who die on the roads on a weekend. Yeah. You look at it and you say 321. That's a pretty low death rate, all things with what some people had led us to believe it was going to be. But then you look at Pinecrest Nursing Home, where like half of the people who were there passed away from it, and those numbers suddenly become a little bit more real, because you can start to imagine that people in that home. These nursing homes, they're small communities, and they've lost friends. People who work there have lost their patients who they grow attached to. They have a care relationship with. Mm-hmm. And
people are losing their parents, their grandparents.
Yeah, and they're just waiting for when the next one's going to go. When you're in that kind of facility, you know what the next step is in your life. And that's the cessation of life. Well, but
it's pretty much a one-way street.
Yeah, it's the Reaper's waiting room in many cases. But you don't expect it all at once. And while you're always ready, when someone's in nursing care, an elderly person's in nursing care, in the back of your head, you're always prepared for that phone call. But just there's something about just the fact that so many are happening at once. Yeah. I don't even know how a facility
it's outside of the natural order. It's outside of the natural order of things, although disease is part of the natural order of things. And we've had plagues, epidemics, and infections, as long as there's been things crawling the surface of the earth. But, we've medical science, and especially in Canada, United States, I think, are a little more used to people dying at young ages of easily preventable illnesses just because of the nature of their healthcare and their obesity rates and all
that. And not to mention the deaths from, metal poisoning, in other words, bullets.
Yeah, there's that too.
Yeah.
Sudden unexpected violent death is not something Canadians are particularly used to, because, we've been blessed with a pretty good healthcare system. Not perfect, but pretty good. Certainly looking better and better every day compared to, the stuff you see that's going on in the United States and other countries that have poor health infrastructure and, social safety nets and, good, nutrition that is at least we're aware of it, even if we're not able to provide it to everybody, but we're still pretty serious about it. you know, in Canada, you know, we're used to a pretty good life. So when something comes in here and just kind of, you know, knocks all the chess pieces over and just says, no, we're not playing this game. We got something else. I got something else for you now. It's just going to shake things up. You know, we're going to bring in a disease that's going to take people more or less randomly. And that's the part that scares people. You know, it's sort of the randomness of it. It used to be like, oh, well, it doesn't affect children. So that's great. You know, and it doesn't affect young people. So, but, you know, older people and like to say, oh, they're, you know, they're getting to the end anyway. You know, it's tragic, but, you know, okay, sera, sera, kind of thing. And now we're going like, wait a second. No, it's not just taking old people, although it is certainly taking them disproportionately. It's taking younger people. It is,
you know, anybody with an underlying condition. And sometimes you don't know you have that underlying
condition. No, you don't know you've got a heart problem until, you know, it stops beating. You know, you don't know that you have all kinds of other, you know, respiratory
things
issues
that stay dormant that you're not aware of. There's vulnerabilities, genetic vulnerabilities you're not aware of. And while it's still really, thank God, not, this is not an epidemic amongst young children, and the young people, the youth that get it, tend, if they don't have these other complications, they go through hell with the disease, but they recover, and then they've got antibodies. And you know, I think the other thing that plays into this is a country's social fabric and a country's social contract between its citizens and its government, and between its citizens and its citizens. And I really think what this has highlighted is that in Canada, we're more of a community than a country in some ways. I think that people here, we've never been the rugged individualists that the American myth has been.
We've always had to huddle together for warmth, if nothing else.
Yeah. And there's a reason that most of our population is concentrated along the border in, you know,
we're hugging the warmth of the United States.
Yeah, we stay in large cities.
We're just cuddling up to them. That's what it is. For, you know, right. For better, or, you know, these days for worse.
Or worse. But I really believe that in Canada, in the US, there's an undercurrent of survival of the fittest. Law of the jungle. It's an economic undercurrent, but it infects all other attitudes. Whereas in Canada, you know, people always say Canada has no national identity. And I think Canada's national identity is that we don't have a national identity. Our national identity is, you know, do unto others.
Yeah, it's more of an attitude than it is, hey,
live and let live. Yeah, we can't be called by dog whistles. The same way we can't be told that something's un-Canadian, and you know, we don't get into those arguments because un-Canadian, well, tell me what that means. There are things that are un-Canadian, and basically what's un-Canadian in Canada is intolerance. Is out of step with the majority.
Treating people badly is considered un-Canadian.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, we don't always live up to those things, but you know, that's
who does? We have
that's the standard that we would like to
we have goals. You know, we have a long way to go, but we've come a long way. And I think that in Canada, certainly what I hear from people is less that they're concerned that they're going to catch the virus than they are concerned that they may accidentally transfer it to somebody else, even strangers out in, you know, that they might transfer it to a stranger out in a grocery store or something like that, that they may be a carrier, not know it. Because a lot of medical professionals are saying that when this is all said and done, the largest majority of people will be people who had COVID-19 and didn't even know it. But I'm hearing a lot of people less concerned about themselves than they are about potentially inflicting this virus on strangers, you know, people they don't know. And that speaks to a concern for each other, for that I don't see replicated. I mean, I'm certain that it exists in the United States. It's such a large, vast country with such a rural-urban divide. It is very difficult to generalize the United States for that reason. But let's face it, we do have different founding myths as countries and founding histories. And that does play a factor. in how we our social fabric has continued to knit together or come apart. You know, if you look at what's been happening in the U.S. and listen, some of that infection is hit here too. You're either with me or you're against me. And
close the borders to foreigners because they're letting in all the disease.
It's always, you know, the other. It reminds me of one of my favorite Beavis and Butthead episodes,
I had to say I love Beavis and Butthead.
It's
brilliant.
When Beavis was working at a drive-thru and he screwed something up and he kept rehearsing what he was going to tell the manager. It wasn't me, it was some foreigner. You know, he just kept saying, it wasn't me, it was some foreigner. The brilliance of Mike Judge work and of Beavis and Butthead is the many levels it works on.
Exactly.
You can look at that. It's like the old classic Warner Brothers cartoons. You take something different from it as an adult and you took from it as a kid. You know, you can sit there with Beavis and Butthead and laugh. You know, you can be basically Beavis and Butthead watching Beavis and Butthead and just laugh at the dumbness of it. Or you can see the very clever satire that's there as well. And so it just reminds me that it wasn't me, it was some foreigner. And America is very good at othering. You know, the only welcome the last wave of immigrants when there's a new wave of immigrants, that they can say, those are the foreigners now.
And their rugged individualism has that nasty side that is coming out right now, which is, you know, it's every man for himself. And, you know, they look in on themselves to the point where, you know, famously, you know, they've started to prohibit the export of ventilators, of protective gear, of face masks. You know, they after promising just yesterday, you know, Trump floated the idea that they weren't going to allow any of the needed medical protective gear. We're not talking about, you know, the face masks that grandma's making in the basement. We're talking about the real medical grade stuff that is produced by 3M in the United States, how they'd stopped the shipment to Canada. And then they promised that, you know, after some hard discussions, I'm sure at the top level, Mike Pompeo, in fact, was talking to Friedland's and tweeted out, I think it was even just this morning, saying, yes, you know, we've talked it out, and of course you're a strategic partner and we wouldn't do that to you. And then Doug Ford announced a little later on this morning that they had in fact intercepted a 3 million masks that were on their way to Ontario and said, you know, these are vital supplies, we're not giving them to those Canadians. And the other one, well, you know, the scary one was, and I'm not sure I've got my facts right, but a celebrity, I think it was Rihanna, who had bought a bunch of 20 ventilators that were being shipped from the United States to the Bahamas. Barbados.
Yeah, that's right.
And the U.S. just said, nope, you're not exporting those. We're going to confiscate those as part of the national stock. And it's like, you can't, you know, the United States is just screwing over partners. And they forget that, as was pointed out, that the fibers that are used for making N95 masks by 3M in the United States comes from British Columbia. It is one of the sole sources of that particular kind of fiber that they use for them. So they're not going to send them to us. The raw materials come here. And, you know, a lot of their toilet paper is made in Canada, too. You know, things.
They're treating us like toilet paper. And, you know, and then there was the mention of, well, you know, there's a lot of nurses who live in Windsor who cross the border to
about 2,000 every day.
Yeah. In Detroit or in Michigan. It'd be terrible if they stopped going across the border.
Not to mention the northeastern power grid of the United States, which comes out of Quebec and in Ontario. Yeah. And,
that's all above the comprehension level of the current occupant of the Oval Office.
Speaking of Beavis and Butthead. Yeah.
Yeah. Beavis and Butthead are geniuses compared to the way Donald Trump has comported himself while in office. You know, mercurial, unreliable, no regard for the truth, doesn't matter. All that matters is what, you know, he can get people to believe, you know, and the selfishness, the absolute selfishness and narcissism. It's, I can't say that we've ever had a leader in Canada, like that, ever. of any party. I really can't. And the while we're speaking of leaders, I never thought that I would see Doug Ford step up and act like the premier of this province. He has, his record has been inhumane up until a few weeks ago. The cuts that he made, the degree of hurt that he has caused people amongst the most unnecessarily amongst the most vulnerable, the wasteful spending, the penalties in the hundreds of millions he's had to pay just because he wants to fight green energy because he's got a grudge against it because it's hippies. He was a terrible, terrible premier, but he has really stepped up.
Yep. He's risen to the occasion here.
Yeah, he really has stepped up to the point where the Liberals, the federal Liberals and the provincial conservative government here are working quite well together. Chrystia Freeland has glowing things to say about her relationship with Doug Ford during this period. And it shows a tenor in him. It shows a mettle in Doug Ford that he had not been showing previously. It shows that there is a human being in there. And people can say, well, it's all his advisors. He's the one who makes the decisions. And his advisors probably told him before not to make certain cuts and so on, but he did it anyway because he does what he wants. But I think that we're legitimately seeing a human being come out of all those bumper sticker slogans that used to be Doug Ford. I don't know if after this he's going to go right back.
Well, and that's going to be the stickers. Test. Whether this sticks or not. I mean, and people are saying like, well, this means he'll get reelected, and people forget that even someone like Winston Churchill, who ran World War II as saved England. Yeah, and saved England and arguably the West because the United States wasn't interested in fighting in it, and he managed to sort of negotiate and position them to come in as well. They were really the bastion island against it. And in the end of 1945, the war was over, they had a general election and they kicked him out.
Yeah.
Because some people are good wartime prime ministers, presidents, and some people just are not suited to peace. So we'll see.
Well, it's also some people don't want to be reminded of that terrible time. And if you elect the same leader who was the leader during that terrible time, it's just something I think subconscious. They're like, we don't want anything reminding us every day of the shit that we went through. Yeah. And people have a very short memory. And listen, I don't know. He's still got, another year and a half in his mandate? I don't believe that this is going to last another year and a half. I believe that he will still have himself at least a good year to go back to show whether he goes back to being the pre-COVID-19 Doug Ford, or he's actually found a way to govern that's more humane and more in the mold of a Bill Davis government.
And no one would be happier than me if he's had a conversion on the road to Damascus and he is a changed person as a result of this, because now he's got a newfound respect for teachers, for nurses, for hospitals, for all the doctors, for all the people that his party has consistently kicked around and delighted in doing so. And now they're going like, wow, these people really do work hard, are necessary, and are worth the money. So if that sticks, then maybe he does turn into a Bill Davis-y type person.
And what? If he does, then he does deserve. Then he does deserve to be considered for re-election. If we're not re-electing the same guy who had been premier up to this point.
Yeah, well, I'm still not going to vote for him, but
neither am I. But
it makes him a more palatable second choice.
Well, and he's with him showing a little more humanity. All of those chest beaters, those men who revel in masculine performance, who were giant supporters of him because they saw him as basically an FU to the elite. Because, the guy who was born into money is not elite. Yeah. They've quieted down.
It's really surprising how quiet that part of the world has become. I mean, even, you know, Scheer was having a press conference this morning, and everyone's going like, oh, really? Just sit down and be quiet. It's not like it's, you know, we're not Hungary. We don't have like haven't voted dictatorial powers to the prime minister. I mean, There still is accountability and there's a whole structure and all the rest. And these are extraordinary times, but no one thinks that this is a power grab for nefarious purposes. So, you know, sure, point out constructively if you think there's things that can be done better, absolutely. But sitting
provide
and
provide a solution. Provide an alternative rather than saying, because Scheer's whole thing has always been whenever Trudeau does something and it's successful, he's, I could have done it better. Yeah. You know, it's just, he's a childish man, Andrew Scheer, and he is an embarrassment to the fine history of the Conservative Party in this country. And
he's got more than just one foot out the door at this point. I mean, he's got three quarters of his body out the door.
He's barely got his fingernails in the door. You know, it's just still holding on. And I mean, like, you've been rejected by three quarters of the country. You've been rejected by your party, who only, most of whom only voted for you because they hate Trudeau and they wouldn't vote any way other than Conservative, but they didn't like you. And he's continuing to comport himself as if this is the last election, you know? And I think all he's doing, every time he opens his mouth, it's another shovel full of dirt on the grave of the next leader of the Conservative Party of Canada. You know, whether it's too many pucks to the head, Petey, or the tool that win, he is, Canadians are not reacting very well to someone who is playing blind politics at a time when we need to be pulling together. They're not, it's like, you're not helping. You are actually part of the problem. And he is putting a stain on his party that I don't think is going to be shaken all that fast with the new people, that whoever comes in to lead them to their next defeat. He's being badly advised. If it's not bad advice and it's his own decision to be behaving this way, then thank goodness we dodged the bullet of him ever being in a very strong leadership position in this country. Yeah. This is not the way to carry on. During World War II, there were loud parties. Not necessarily mean political parties, but large groups who were saying, "Get us out of the war. Yeah. It's Europe's problem." Blah blah blah. So it's not to say that everybody came together in this great effort of World War II, like you see in movies. There was still dissent on the home front about whether we should be involved.
And that's why
at all.
They call it the loyal opposition. I mean, you know, yes, you know, your duty is to oppose sometimes if you see something's wrong, but it's a loyal opposition as well. I mean, it's not loyal to the government, but it's loyal to the country. And I think, you know, the example provincially in Ontario has been a really good one because, as you said, you know, Doug Ford has been doing a lot of the right things and saying a lot of the right things. You know, early on, it was a little iffy, but he certainly, you know, has learned the right tune to play for Ontario. And if you follow the NDP and the provincial Liberals on their Twitter accounts, you'll see the Liberal or the NDP critic for health saying, you know, the government is doing the right thing, and they're retweeting government announcements and they're supporting government policy in terms of the public health issues. And so they have put politics on the back burner and said, look, you know, here's the message. Just because it comes from the government doesn't mean it's a bad message. The government is putting out these messages, and you should be, to the point where they're retweeting opposition cabinet ministers.
Yeah.
I think that is what Canadians want to see a little bit more of. And also, you know, you don't want to start confusing the message either. This is an evolving message. You know, Dr. Tam just this morning said, well, you know, masks, maybe, people going out in public should be wearing masks, not because it keeps you from getting anything, but it keeps you from spreading it if you have COVID-19 and you're not aware of it, which is the same message they've had from the very beginning.
Yeah.
And I've seen all kinds of people jumping on her, both in the media and politicians, going like, she should be fired because that message is completely different than the message it was last week. It's like, well, number one, the situation is evolving, and the things that we thought worked a couple of weeks ago may not be working anymore. So we have to change the way we do it. You got to be a little nimble.
Which is what happens when you're dealing with a brand new virus.
A novel coronavirus.
Yes. Yeah.
That's why the word novel's in there, because it is new.
We're learning as we go. And so some things we're going to discover, okay, that's not as effective as we thought it was. And so we're going to pivot onto the thing that we think will become more effective. And then there's those who say, you know, they said one thing, then they said another thing. They don't know anything. It's like they're learning. That's the point. They're moving towards the point of more information, more control over understanding what's going on with this pathogen. They're not just throwing out crazy theories. This is
like the president of the president of the United States saying, everyone, get hydroxychloroquine. Like, no, it'll kill you. You know, you get people who are finding, this is the same stuff that you use for cleaning aquarium fish tanks. I'm going to go eat some of that.
And that
guy died in the United States.
Yeah, I wouldn't insult the word theory or the concept theory by saying that anything Donald Trump says is a theory.
It's just quackery. It is the problem. It's the same kind of. It's the worst part of the internet. It's the worst part of infomercials at 3 a.m.
He's a timeshare salesman. You know, like, what do I need to do to get you to buy today? You know, well, they've got you trapped in the thing because they got your orange juice and JoJo movie. he's a huckster. He's a salesman and a huckster.
Yeah, and he doesn't care about outcomes as long as he looks good in it. It doesn't matter.
Well, the outcome that he cares about is that people believe him and that he comes out as the hero. And even when he doesn't, in his own head, he has.
Yeah, who the narrative says, changes.
Yeah, who says that? Whoever would say that they give themselves 100%, rating or an A+. Whoever would actually say that, and who would ever say? What leader would ever say, I take no responsibility? You don't even understand leadership when you're doing the thing, you know, like the Scarecrow and the Wizard of Oz, which way did they go? You just cross your arms and point the other way. That's who's responsible. It's not leadership. I really think that Trudeau has been appropriately low key in his delivery of the information.
Yeah.
He's deliberately not affecting a tone that is likely to cause or infer
alarm,
panic or alarm or
ambiguity.
Yeah. Or that there's something he's not telling us. Cause you know, sometimes people will talk, leaders will talk, and you just get the feeling that they're dancing around something. Mm-hmm. And you don't get that with him. He's just coming out and he's just talking. There's no hyperbole. There's no drama. Here is what is really going on. And
some of the media have been actually quite upset about that because, you know, in part of it, it's the nature of the beast. They're saying, well, you know, what are the projections like? It's a big brand and it depends on what your assumptions are. We're not sure about the assumptions. What are the numbers? Trudeau's keeping the numbers from us. It's like, you know, you're asking me to predict the future. I can't do that. I can, here's what we think works best today. Here's what everyone should be doing. We'll tell you tomorrow morning if it's not working or if we change your mind. It's like, not good enough. We need to know right now. It's like, it doesn't work way.
If only the media would adopt some of the comportment and sense of responsibility that the various parties in Queen's Park have done that we just spoke about, which is stop looking for things to criticize, stop looking for things to find fault with. If there is... You know, it is the job of the press to tell us if there's something we're not being told, but don't make it out like there's something that's being hidden from us when it isn't. Don't sensationalize. Don't just be trying to, you know, boost your circulation and your clicks at the expense of people's sense of well-being. Listen, I think I mentioned last week, I know a friend of a friend who had an anxiety condition killed himself. Because of the conflicting information, the doomsayers, the people who were constantly freaking out, and the media who was helping to sell that sizzle as opposed to the steak of information, and he couldn't handle it. And there are, not to mention the mental health concerns of just being, locked up in your home. I mean, you and I, Stephen, are very fortunate.
We're locked up in our homes all the time.
Yes. Well, this doesn't change our lifestyle has changed very little.
Oh, they barely let us out.
And we have homes that have more than one room. We're very fortunate in that way. We've each got spouses that are supportive, that keep us
company. Who still love us, yes.
Yeah. And you've got a son. Yep. And so
Still loves being with his parents, which is unusual.
You've done a good job. So there are support systems that we have within our home, and we have places like we can walk around our homes and not constantly be in the same room. Whereas there's some people who are in bachelor apartments, downtown, small condos.
Yep. No yard, no balcony.
The size of a closet. Yep. Sitting there day in, day out, the walls coming in on them. Sometimes there's more than one person living in a place that's barely enough space for one person. And mental health is something that really is exceptionally important during this time. The medical teams, like the epidemiologists, the disease specialists, they're working on finding better information and better ways to manage this illness. The other medical professionals that we really need to start seeing step up and give briefings to our mental health professionals to try to help people and to give out the phone numbers of lines, the phone lines that, Trudeau gave money, extra money to Kids Help Phone, because kids, of course, hear everything third hand. And don't have the life experience to be able to contextualize what's going on. Hell, most of us adults don't. This is something new. But we need to be emphasizing the Prime Minister should be coming out, and at the end of his updates should be giving out the phone numbers for crisis lines. Because that's what's needed now, that kind of support, because there's...
Oh, because the anxiety out there right now. I mean, there's the economic anxiety. I mean, people who literally are not able to go to their work. I mean, we have a service economy here in Canada and in the big cities, and there's no service. I mean, there's skeleton staffs in some places, and people, Canadians are very good at saying thank you and being grateful to the people who are still working in order to get food on our tables and all the rest, just to keep the basics running. But so many people have had economic insecurity. I mean, day-to-day insecurity about paying their rent, about paying for their internet. I mean, their kids are in school, and are they going to get their year? They're scrambling.
There's so many things.
So there's a lot to be anxious about. I mean, and we will get through it. And the government is, compared to, the United States has got a one-time check of, I think they're going to change that, but at the moment it's a one-time check of $1,200. And they don't want people to get too used to government bailouts. And, unless you're a major corporation.
Unless you're a bank.
If you're a bank or a cruise line, then sure, here's a couple $1 trillion. But if you're an actual person, that actually makes you lazy and irresponsible if they actually give you any money.
That's
doesn't make corporations lazy and irresponsible, even though they're sitting on tons and tons of cash and been given out to shareholder dividends.
Yeah.
But if you're an individual, you can't have that. In Canada, they actually just opened up today, as we record this, it's Monday, and they opened up the money that is coming out, was it the CER?
Oh, yeah, the relief money. Yeah.
The relief money. And people were able to do it. And people are saying, look, I got through the website didn't crash. I was able to get on there and file my form within four and a half minutes I'm signed up. So the money will start to flow hopefully soon, because someone has to process that money at the other end, obviously.
Yeah.
But, I'm sure that there's a commitment to that. So there are some things economically that will bootstrap us a little bit through the next little while, and hopefully
as long as it's not that much longer. I think that people are only going to be willing to stay inside for so long. It's
well,
spring,
and the nice weather is already coming, and Canadians are like if they're like me, they're vitamin D deficient and they're pale and sort of mole people, and
we're
waiting for the first bit.
Today I was out. I had to go to an office of a client and get something. And I drove, and I drove with the windows open. I was like, you know, let the virus in. You know, I did. You know,
it doesn't spread that way, so you're okay.
Yeah, yeah. But it was just, wow, it's so nice to be able to drive with windows open and get fresh air, and there's sunlight. And we're only going to be able to resist that for so long. Contents under pressure will explode. So we have to, you know, I guess start making the point that we're not saying don't go out at all, unless you're actually tested positive or you're showing symptoms or you're vulnerable group. But go out and exercise caution. Keep your social distance. But if you want to go for a walk, you want to go for a bike ride, just follow the same rules. Keep your distance from people. Wash your hands. Wash your face. Don't touch your eyes. Like just, but you don't have to stay locked into your home. You can go out as long as you use common sense.
Yep, as long as you do. And I sort of have a sneaking suspicion when what they're saying is the out about face by Dr. Tam about wearing a face mask out in public. I kind of wonder whether or not that's just meant to be sort of an aid memoir to people. It's just to remind them when they're out that it's not normal, and this face mask itself may not do anything at all.
It's like the red ribbon around your finger to remind yourself of something.
Yeah, it's like tying a string around your finger to remind yourself it's always there. And it's like, oh, okay, I'm wearing a mask, which reminds me I should be staying away from that person.
Yeah.
Crowding, the line at the ATM.
It's a constant physical reminder that something is different.
And as they say, it can't hurt, obviously, except, it maybe gives you a false sense of security and you get too close to people because like, I'm wearing a mask, I'm invulnerable now. It's like, no, you're not. But maybe it will remind a whole bunch of people who are not necessarily getting the message. There was a house party in Brampton on the weekend. I don't know if you saw that. 1,500 people showed up to a house under construction and basically trashed the place, but they were having like a rave. So people are not necessarily always getting the message. So
they got the message. Those are people who have rejected it.
Yeah.
Don't care. And you're always going to get those people. Yeah. And the problem is if they only made themselves sick, they're so what?
We've got the example in Boris Johnson, who, as we speak right now, has just gone into an ICU in England.
Yeah.
And he was at the beginning, he was a coronavirus denier at the beginning. He says, I'm shaking hands with everyone. I don't care. I'm touching stuff. It's don't worry. Go about your business. Things are normal. Look at me. I'm fine. And, now they're talking about, he's not on a ventilator yet, but that sounds like it's the next stage for him.
Well, I'll tell you this as we wrap up. One of the things that this pandemic has done is I think it's brought Canadians together more than we have been in quite a while. And it's made me really extra happy for the fact that I live in Canada. I think it's shown the civility of our country and the community of our country and, I think we've done ourselves proud as Canadians by and large with our response to this illness. And it just makes me again, very happy to be living here to be a citizen of this country and living here, because it is a privilege to be a part of a country like this.
Yep. And when we all come out with our homemade haircuts, and I have to admit, I've had to trim, just as this thing was hitting. So I've been basically at home for more than 3 weeks now. And I was getting ready for a haircut right about then. I thought, the person who cuts my hair, I go to Top Cuts, for $18. And, the woman who cuts my hair only works on like Wednesday, Thursdays and Fridays. It was the beginning of the week. I thought, and then everything started shutting down. So I needed a haircut 3 weeks ago. By the time this comes out, I'm thinking I can only cut the front. So by the time this is over, I'm going to have a mullet. I'm going to be really nice and tight in the front.
Gonna look
but it's
like
going to be really long down the back.
You're going to look like Jim Carrey or something from Dumb and Dumber, one of those. See, this is another thing that I've realized I should be happy for. I haven't had to go to have my hair cut in about 30 years. because I don't have any. I have a trimmer that I bought that I use at home. You really can't go wrong. Just you know, getting rid of it all.
Well, here you get another profession when all this is done. You can set up shop and just put a chair out on the front lawn and say haircut's $10 and make some coin.
I wouldn't trust me with the well, with the razor.
I
tell
you, I wouldn't be your first customer, but I might be your 20th or 30th.
All right. Well, we will be back again. I hope you guys have enjoyed our conversation.
End of the week is Passover. It's Pesach. So
yes.
have a good Passover for those who celebrate.
Thank you. And
and a good Easter for those who celebrate the other one.
We just had Palm Sunday. If you can, I mean, it's going to be very difficult to have Passover Seders this year. I imagine there'll be a lot of Passover Seders happening through Skype and Zoom.
Yeah, and the Easter egg hunt is going to be pretty much restricted to the front hall.
Yeah, that's right. I found them all there in the corner. Yeah, but take care of yourselves.
We make our own fun.
Yeah,
I think Canadians are getting good at that too.
All right, take care of yourselves, everyone. Stephen. Take care of yourself and everybody in your household.
I shall, and you.
And you are at Stephen Lautens, STEPHENLAUTENS on Twitter.
Quite a bit these days, actually, because there's not a lot else to do.
Yeah, no kidding. And I'm at Stephen with a V, Stephen J. Kersner. And sometimes I even check that Twitter. So we'll see you again next week. This has been Stephen and Stephen on the FU Network's FU Politics channel.
This is fun! The FU Network!